Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So I didn't see any Amoroso tweets coming out of Trump today. I thought for sure, there'd be something, another dog comment, lazy, crying, whiny, second chance. Anybody buy the second chance argument, by the way? Evidently they were giving her a second chance. Anybody believe that Trump's capable of that? You think that's possible? I know that I don't. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world and in Washington, D.C. Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Justin, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, great to be here as always.
So anything on the Omarosa? I can never say her name right.
Omarosa, she was, interestingly absent from a lot of the coverage today. Last night she was on The Daily Show, and she acknowledged the fact that, there are legal proceedings coming from the Trump campaign to pretty much enforce the non-disclosure agreement. And so, therefore, she now says that she has been advised to not discuss the tapes and not move forward with the explosive bombshell media appearances that she's been giving so far. So it looks like that may have been successful for right now. It's certainly taken a lot of the oxygen out of the room, but the book is out, and considering the penchants that she's had for drama so far, it doesn't necessarily seem like there's much of a possibility that she's going to be quiet for too much longer. She's done a lot of damage. The White House is trying to move away from that now, but the cat's out of the bag. You already have the president calling her a dog and making this into a much bigger story than it should have been.
Yeah, I mean, had he just shut his mouth and let it go and, think she's just, she was on that, what was that reality show not too long ago that nobody watched?
Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah, that was it. And, had you just left her alone and go, oh, she's just a kook and let her go, nobody would have, I don't think anyone would have paid her much attention. But as soon as you start going out to the dog and the, we gave her a second chance and, all of the low life or whatever else he called her. Now people are going, wait a second, that's not presidential.
No, I mean, even after that appearance, we had the White House really changing their tune on her. That was back in February, I believe. Initially the White House said that Omarosa resigned but was going to stay on in the administration until January 20th of this year. The day after that happened, Sarah Sanders from the podium said that Omarosa was actually coming in later that day, the day after she was, as we now know, fired by John Kelly, and really kind of trying to play nice with it. Trump said that she was a great person the day after she was fired. And then everything changed after the Celebrity Big Brother appearance. They changed their tune. They did some kind of wise crack about how this was the fourth time that Omarosa was fired. Saying that she was fired multiple times from The Apprentice and then fired from the administration, and really sort of giving her the exact message that she needed for her tell-all book, shaping that narrative. And lo and behold, when the book that everybody in D.C. expected to come finally came, it pretty much is a response to that one comment from the Deputy White House Press Secretary from the podium. So they certainly made their bed when they poked the bear.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I look at this, and there's this conspiratorial part of me that goes, this is exactly what they want. They want this massive distraction so that we're not realizing how badly we're getting ripped off. We're not realizing how they're, in a regulatory fashion, changing most of the actions of government. We're not talking about the children that have been ripped away from their parents and probably will never get back with them. We're not talking about Turkey. We're not talking about Iraq or Afghanistan. We're not talking about any of the other stuff. We're not even talking about Russia anymore. We're talking about the pie fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that people put out a lot. My general response to that is I think it's more of a byproduct of all of this. And frankly, I think it gives them too much credit, since there really is just this recognition that they can't necessarily organize a two-car parade. And if they were really that dedicated to fulfilling that agenda, they would be doing it in a way where you wouldn't have Scott Pruitt and others, lasting in positions for months and months and months after it became just a political landmine. But lo and behold, that's how we've seen this administration conduct itself.
That is an excellent point. And one that has been made to me numerous times. And one that, when I used to say things about the Bush administration, I have a friend who believes 9/11 was an inside job, and I make the argument that I don't even think George could put together a picnic basket to take out on the road, so let alone plan something like that. And you look at this administration, much more chaotic than the Bush administration which is just kind of amazing to say that as well. But yeah, there you go. Let's move on. Today, evidently, Trump and the White House revoked the security clearance of John Brennan. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, this was an announcement from the president that Sarah Sanders read from the podium, saying that this was due to erratic behavior from John Brennan, saying that, you know, he's had unhinged appearances on the internet and on TV, and therefore can no longer be trusted to have access to classified information, saying that this is basically a courtesy given to former officials so that if they need to consult with the current intelligence community, they would have the ability to do so. And the argument now is that the risk of, you know, Brennan continuing to do this outweighs any benefits that it could provide. And of course, this argument just doesn't stand up under scrutiny. This is pretty clearly politically motivated, more so when you consider the fact that the president in the statement said that he is going to be reviewing the security clearance guidelines for James Comey, for James Clapper, for Susan Rice, for Peter Strzok, for Lisa Page, for Bruce Orr. Just this long list of officials, of people who really the only thing they have in common is that they have publicly criticized the president. And then really just adding another veneer of ridiculousness to this. Sarah Sanders couldn't even articulate what exactly the criteria for this would be, just saying that this was going to be examined on a case-by-case basis moving forward, which pretty much just gave away the game and gave up the shop. So, you know, this is rightfully being seen as an act of political retaliation. Nobody's buying the administration's argument that this is anything beyond that. The ACLU has stepped in, noting that they are no fans of John Brennan and have been critics of him when it comes to, you know, torture, when it comes to drones and just a whole myriad of other issues, but saying that this is a pretty blatant example of the government punishing a private citizen for free speech and setting up what could be a pretty big legal battle. This looks like, you know, this could have put him in some pretty precarious constitutional territory. The president has the right to do this, but as we've seen time and time again, when the president pretty much clearly states his motives, that gets him in trouble. That's what happened with the travel ban originally. And the fact that, and, you know, I guess that also is what happened to Comey to a large extent when he said that, you know, the reason why he did it was to remove pressure on the Russia investigation. So I would not be surprised to see the fact that they made this about his tweets and his TV appearances come back to bite them.
As it should. I mean, at the end of it, I've often questioned, you know, why they continue to get them for a lifetime. You know, why does Henry Kissinger get them? I mean, you know, he's been out of any power for a long time. You know, why does this stuff continue? And it's always been thrown back at me that, you know, this is a small community, and, you know, they kind of, you know, they're kind of fluid and they bounce things off each other, and institutional knowledge, all of that stuff. And, you know, on a certain level, it makes a little sense. But to now say we're going to do this based purely on our political ideology and who we don't like, and if someone said something mean about us, I start to question it.
I mean, it's not good. It's not how the government should be running, and there shouldn't be a precedent for, you know, outright punishing people through government means because they have political differences. You know, that's something that the right was in an uproar over when it came to the IRS scandal, when it looked like the Obama administration could be, you know, through the IRS punishing people.
Well, people still believe that. I just talked to a guy the other day who still believes that the IRS is punishing conservative groups, even today, and pointing out that, you know, Trump is the head of is in the White House, and that the Republicans can control both branches of government, both, you know, houses in Congress and, you know, the Supreme Court. He still believes the IRS is attacking conservative voices, and the media is out to get them. And now, granted, this guy seems now to be off the path, but still, you know, there are still people who believe that they're still doing it.
Well, you know, according to the White House, the president is consistently under audit, even for tax returns that he, you know, hasn't filed yet. When a reporter asked preemptively before he filed his taxes last time around whether or not the president would be releasing it publicly, the response from the podium was, nope, it's under audit, even though it hadn't had the chance to be subjected to that yet. So this is the mindset we have.
You know, every day do you wake up and go, how much worse can it get? You know, how much crazier can people be? I mean, because, you know, lately I've had some conversations with people who are buying this QAnon stuff, And, you know, I've been in this mindset, you know, that we've been down the rabbit hole, but this just seems to be terminal velocity free fall into insanity.
I mean, it's a dangerous precedent. I think the media was largely irresponsible for giving it attention in the first place based on the fact that, you know, there were a couple of signs at a rally. You know, I've been to a lot of rallies. I've seen a lot of signs that were pretty much off message. And I didn't necessarily dive into that or think that I was worth, you know, a long, deep look by the press. You know, there have been like Lyndon LaRouche signs at every single protest you can think of for decades and decades. No one's really...
And he's a crank, and we ignore that. We move on.
Right, yeah. No, I just I think it's dangerous. I think what really would be damaging for this is if the president ever starts to embrace it. You know, this is obviously being enjoyed by a large portion of his base, and it's not that far of a jump to imagine the president, you know, starting to appeal to that, starting to, you know, maybe speak in dog whistles to members of that community, much like he's, you know, pretty much done similarly coded language to portions of his base who are pretty clearly racist.
Wow. I guess this is how they reach out to the non-evangelicals. This is their dog whistle. You know, I know when Pence talks to his clan, you know, that's the crowd. I guess this is the non-evangelical crowd. Crazy.
I mean, the evangelical crowd believes that Trump was chosen by God and that election night was a miracle. And the Q nonsense gives another easy out, this idea that the president is right no matter what and is secretly in cahoots with Mueller. And so therefore, every error so far has just been part of his grand master plan. It's terrifying.
Oh, my God. Oh, somebody wake me. Wake me when it's over. let's move on. Evidently, Sarah Sanders gave some false employment data from the from her spot. Am I surprised? Yeah. She lies about everything else. Why would I not be surprised about lying about employment data?
Well, what's interesting here is that she apologized for it.
Oh.
You know, she said yesterday that the president, during his 16 months or so in office, created more jobs for you know, African Americans than President Barack Obama did during his entire 8 months. That turned out, you know, during his entire 2 year, two-term tenure. There we go. That was pretty swiftly fact-checked and determined to not be true by a lot of people. You know, Obama created 3 million jobs for African Americans during his presidency. Trump so far has created about 700,000. And then we had the Council of Economic Advisors coming out saying that there was a miscommunication with the press secretary, and then giving their own spin on the data, one that included periods of time that hurt Trump, that included the end of the Bush presidency for about 3 months, and then data that helped boost Trump by including the final 3 months of the Obama presidency. So just a lot of, you know, head spinning over that. But overall, at the end of it, Sanders did apologize, but then did a bit of a sorry, not sorry thing by saying, I'm sorry for miscommunicating this, but I'm not sorry for the 700,000 jobs that were created under Trump. Something that nobody was really attacking anybody over. So.
But here's the thing. Is she finding a conscience? Because, you know, she was asked the other day if Trump had used the N-word, and she said that she can't guarantee it. I can't guarantee it.
I mean, I honestly just don't know how she has a job in this White House after that. You know, considering the fact that the White House goes through great lengths to just pretty much fudge the facts on a lot of things, that just was staggering in its own right. And, you know, frankly, I'm somebody who was a skeptic about that tape existing. You know, I think the Omarosa claims for that weren't necessarily very convincing, since there seems to be a lot of contradictory information for that.
Right.
I'm of the mindset that if that tape existed, it would have been out a long time ago. But after that statement and performance from the podium,
kind of got to wonder.
I think it seems a lot more likely now than it did.
But here's the thing: does it hurt him? Yeah. I mean, honestly and truthfully, does a tape of him, you know, going on, you know, basically saying the N-word for 20 minutes, does it hurt him at all, or does it actually strengthen, you know, his base by going, yeah, damn right, we should be able to say that?
I've had a lot of arguments over this. My main idea for it is that I think it would hurt him immeasurably, solely because we have a pretty simplistic view of race when it comes to sort of the broader discourse for it. You know, people all over the country will say, well, I'm not racist because I don't use that word, or I'm not racist because I don't wear a hood. And then once you take away that veneer, when you really just kind of boil it down to it and give the actual example for it, no more of this, you know, beating around the bush, no more dog whistles, no more Confederate flags or going after NFL players. When you actually get down to the root of it, I think there's going to be no other explanation except for, you know, that the president is racist. And I think that's a very easy to understand argument for a lot of Trump supporters who don't necessarily read the most woke literature or spend time on Twitter reading, you know, the opinions of writers of color and whatnot. I think there's no real way to avoid that conclusion based on how we talk about race in the U.S. And I don't think there's going to be much wiggle room for anybody to come to his defense. There could be an argument that it just happened about 10 years ago, but this would be like the Hollywood Access or Access Hollywood tape on steroids. I think there's a much different standard in this country, right or wrong, when it comes to, you know, racism versus sexism, and I think it would absolutely hobble him. So that's my far-reaching, perhaps overly optimistic take on it, I guess.
I hope you're right. My fear is it doesn't. My fear is that the base, you know, embraces it. See, he really is one of us. And moves it right forward. And finally, evidently the CDC has reported that there were 72,000 opioid deaths in 2017.
Yeah, new data from the CDC, very disheartening. 72,000 opioid deaths in the U.S. A lot of these, about 30,000 of which ended up being from fentanyl and other, you know, basically prescription drugs that get abused.
Yep.
And it really highlights the fact that this happened under the president's watch, and shows that the strategy either isn't in place or didn't really snap into place.
There's a strategy?
Beginning. You know, and that's the issue, too. You know, there's been a couple of meetings. There's been some gestures to try to move forward with some, you know, small things. But overall, we still don't have a drug czar in place. And that should really terrify a lot of people. You know, there's an acting director right now who was nominated. His, you know, nomination took about 3 months to finally go up to the Senate. There still hasn't been any hearings for that. And, you know, as the data reflects today, this is something that is a crisis and warrants a government-wide response. And there just doesn't necessarily seem to be anybody who is, you know, in the Senate-approved position to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, I mean, do we even know who the people are? I mean, do we know the situation? Do we have any clue of who the target is? I mean, like, most of the people I know who have been addicted to painkillers are people who got hurt at work. You know, they started off, or you know, like anything. You know, I had my gallbladder out a couple years ago. And, you know, the first thing that is, here's some Vicodin if the pain gets to be too much. I'm like, no, I'm all right. You know, I'll deal with it one way or another. But, you know, every time, you know, I messed up my knee, oh, here's some Percocet. You know, it's always, you know, here's some painkillers. And, you know, it's the same thing, you know, when you get to, you know, especially with people who get really injured with, you know, really major injuries that are, you know, you can't sleep at night, you got a back injury, you can't even breathe, and that we just dope them up so that they feel nothing. Is it that? Is it, you know, who, I don't even know. Do we have an idea of who these folks are?
I mean, we have an idea there. I guess to a large extent it dovetails with Trump's base, which is why this is getting sympathetic coverage when, you know, other addiction epidemics like crack or whatnot kind of fell through the cracks.
Right.
So that's a larger systemic issue that I'm not going to touch into.
I'm just curious if you know.
Well, I mean, it's a complicated issue, and it boils down to the fact that there is nobody in charge who has that expertise to really navigate this. The person that they put in charge of the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the, you know, drug czar, who has not been confirmed yet, has no public health experience, has a bit of a tenure at the Justice Department, I believe Ford Motors as well, and then served in the Bush White House in a non-public health capacity as the person who pretty much looked at security clearances and whatnot. And then he, after pretty much being you know, kicked out of the White House, according to the rumor mill, was elevated to this massively important issue, and then just hasn't really been able to do anything with it, nor been much of a public face to announce it. And lo and behold, here we are today after months and months and months of the Trump presidency. And there's just no clear-cut examples for what exactly has changed and who's been aided by this. And that's just depressing.
Yeah, it is. It is depressing. But I thought you were going to tell me that, you know, the guy worked for the company that makes fentanyl or something like that. That's how screwed up things are. Just is what it is. Justin, I appreciate the time. Sad stuff to hear about, but I appreciate it. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you, Rick. Have a good one.
Good stuff. Our good friend Justin Duckham, Talk Media News. Quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.